does Marcellus Wallace look like?
What?
What country you from?
What?
What ain't no country I ever heard of? They speak English and what?
What?
English,
Welcome once again to the fastest 40 minutes in podcasting. That is the one that won the poll, right?
I believe so.
Okay.
If not, we're going with it.
Yeah, it's too late now. We've no turning back. All right. We have a longstanding rule at Rock Him Nation. Anytime the basketball team makes the Sweet 16, we immediately have to crank out a podcast the next day. Even when spring break is in effect on the Mizzou campus, which let me tell you how nice campus was today, by the way. No offense to, you know, students or anything, but yeah, it was peaceful. All right. We've got plenty to talk about. This kind of agenda just kind of writes itself, and we should start with what I guess is Missouri's new biggest win in 6 or 7 years, at least, that being their 83-79 win over Marquette from yesterday. They've made the Sweet 16. They've held up their seeds, but there was a lot more drama than simply holding serve and making it to Arizona. Ross, what were your initial post-game thoughts?
They held serve for 20 minutes was the ironic part. Since losing at A&M, I made the comment somewhere where every victory, every minute since then had seemed so incredibly workmanlike, where it really wasn't any drama. Obviously, there was some drama, but none that you've come to expect. Then, you know, everything's going along swimmingly for 20 minutes in Boise at Taco Bell Arena. And then just out of nowhere, here comes Marquette. And you were probably like me, just kind of scratching your head, trying to figure out exactly what had just happened as this was going on.
Yeah, I've been kind of lulled to sleep. Like this, like you said, this team has just this very workmanlike way of winning ball games now. And, you know, they're up 16 or whatever in the first half. And you just think, okay, well, I guess we're winning then. And McNeil makes the three-pointer at the buzzer in the first half, and I tried to get myself to worry about that, but, you know, it just cut the lead to 12. And we all know we have hammered home the, you know, Missouri has lost once all year when not losing by double digits at half. And, you know, Missouri was in very good shape, but you knew, I think it was mentioned by a couple different people at halftime that, you know, Marquette was getting to the line a lot. And as long as they're getting to the free throw line, the clock's not running, and they can get some free points, and they can catch up if Missouri's offense goes stagnant. And Missouri's offense went stagnant. And we can, you know, talk about the you know, what we thought was questionable officiating. We're of course, we're the fans, and therefore, of course, we're going to always complain about the officiating. But there were some pretty... The jump ball that was called when Matt Lawrence got crushed by two guys was I kind of almost lost my mind at that point. But no matter, it was up to the losing fans to complain about the refs, and Missouri fans get to move on after blowing a lead and then sucking it up and going on a 9-1 run to end the game.
Imagine what would have happened if Marquette had actually been able to finish from two-point range. What were they, like 45% from two or something?
Oh, I think it was worse than that. I think it was like 39 or 40, yeah.
Especially in the second half. That could have been so much worse than it ended up being.
Yeah, the first 5 minutes, I think that was, you know, the three-pointer at the buzzer the first half was one thing, but the first 5 minutes were just so weird. You know, Marquette getting about six chances per trip down court and missing layup after layup. And then Missouri comes down and Leo Lyons makes, you know, misses two or three layups of his own. And everybody was running up and down the court and trying really hard, but it was just weird basketball. And when things settled down, you figured, you know, Marquette had run itself out, but, you know, they just kept charging forward and kept getting to the line and kept chipping away at the lead.
Yeah, and then one thing I do want to bring up that you mentioned during the statistical recap, statistical onions, if you will, is what happened to the substitution rotation?
Yeah.
What do you think was the premise behind that, especially with how well the reserves were playing?
Yeah, it was interesting. I mean, it started from the beginning, and you know it was intentional because I don't think there were any substitutions on Missouri's part in the first two TV timeout segments of the game, the first 8 minutes or so. And then after 8 minutes, when Marquette's up, I don't know, four, I think it was like 17-13 or 17-11, something like that. Yeah, then the reinforcements come in. Kim English loses his mind for 5 or 6 minutes. Marcus Denman plays pretty well. Keith Ramsey gets a couple good rebounds. And the bench just wrecks shop on Marquette there for a little bit. And then the starters come back in, and they're carrying home, you know, they extend the lead a little bit, and then they ended up, you know, basically holding serve till the end of the half. But then in the second half, yeah, it was kind of, I don't know if it was the intent or not, but once the lead kept getting smaller and smaller, it almost was like Anderson was afraid to go away from his starters, because what happens if the bench players come in and lose the lead?
Yeah, and it's so interesting because it seems like this year the entire story with Missouri's depth is how much he trusts those new guys. And what does that trust just dissipate in the NCAA tournament? Or is this something we need to look out for in future rounds? I don't want to say rounds plural.
I love that you're saying rounds plural. Well, I mean, if we're talking about rounds plural, then whatever we're doing is working, I guess. But, I think throughout times this year, I mean, the crunch time lineup really was, you know, Leo and Damari, Tiller and Taylor, and then, you know, sometimes Matt Lawrence, sorry. Sometimes English, sometimes Marcus Denman would get into that fifth slot there. But, I mean, four out of the five lineups slots in crunch time were set, and it seemed like crunch time, his interpretation of crunch time this time was the last 12 minutes of the game.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that could have caused an awkward situation. You heard Leo saying at the in the press conference that they were pretty gassed. They were exhausted and baffled as to how they had lost the lead. But, you know, I guess, you know, now that we won, it's funny when you win, because, like, the Oklahoma State game earlier this year, everybody was happy to have won that game, but everybody kind of saw it as, you know, are there warning signs here? You know, is this team going to be able to come through in the clutch? Because they sure didn't in Stillwater. They just got kind of lucky. They had built a big lead. OSU missed a couple shots in the last 30 seconds or so. But so it was one of those where we were happy to take the win, but there are lots of shades of gray. And now that we're in the tournament, there are no shades of gray. It was simply that Missouri won, and 5 years from now we'll remember Kim English. We'll remember maybe Leo's three-point play with a minute left. And, you know, I guess probably remember Marquette stepping on the line on the inbounds pass, although, I mean, that's like my third or fourth memory there.
I guarantee it's not Marquette's third or fourth memory.
Yeah, it's their second after Mike Anderson cheating. But, yeah, it's just, I mean, it's funny that because that's what I'm going to remember. I'm not going to remember blowing a 16-point lead. Well, I might a little bit, but I mean, I'm going to remember the good plays. Whereas, you know, the loss to OU in the Elite Eight in 2002, clearly we played pretty well because we only lost by like 4 or 6. But all I remember about that game is Clarence Gilbert going like 2 for 29 from the field and AJ going about 1 for 15 from the free throw line. And so, yeah, this is the time of year there are no more gray, shades of gray.
Yeah.
So, yeah, black and white, Missouri wins, and they get to move on to play the Memphis Tigers. Seth Davis is a favorite team in the tournament. Doesn't think Missouri has a shot in the world, really.
Favorite team ever.
Yeah, exactly. So, does Missouri have a shot in the world?
You know, it's one of those things, if you ask me to predict the game, this might be the best sign I have yet, is that in my gut, it feels like Memphis very well could walk away with this. Again, this is coming straight out of my gut. This being the same gut I used to fill out my bracket, which I believe is at like 24% right now and absolutely buried in the basement of the Rock M contest. I'd be a little bit more concerned if it was the bowl pick'em, but with the bracket, I know I'm set up for failure here. Obviously, Memphis has the horses to run away from anybody in the country, but you've got to wonder how much experience plays into it. Not necessarily experience per se, not that Missouri has NCAA tournament experience, but how often has Memphis been challenged, especially since Tyreke Evans kind of became the heart and soul of that basketball team?
Yeah, I mean, in today's Memphis preview, which I was very proud of myself for cranking both of these out in the same day, by the way, and still working, I defined quote-unquote real opponents as major conference teams or NCAA tournament teams. So, I mean, that generously includes Chattanooga and Cal State Northridge as, you know, quote-unquote real opponents. And they went 7-3, which is good against the 10 teams, which is Chattanooga, Seton Hall, Xavier, Georgetown, Syracuse, Cincinnati, Tennessee, Gonzaga, CS North, and Maryland. They went 7-3 against those teams, but like their shooting percentage was dead on even with their opponents. And, you know, Ken Pomeroy has them number one in the country because of their defensive efficiency. Well, looking at shooting percentages, it's really, if opponents can get a shot off, they're relatively good. If, you know, the real opponents on the schedule, they loaded up on the Conference USA, the dregs of the Conference USA. But there's a little, I was encouraged when I put those stats together. I think I'm more optimistic about Missouri's chances now than I was when I threw this together. You know, Memphis against real opponents shoots 29.8% from 3-point range. And that's including Robert Sally's awakening last weekend in Kansas City, which there's absolutely no way to predict whether that will continue or not.
Yep.
I mean, if it does, they're a hell of a team. But if he goes back to being his normal self, he averaged in those 10 games, even with the whatever 50 points he scored in those two games, he only scored 80 total in those 10 games. So, I mean, this was out of nowhere, even more out of nowhere than Kim English's transcendence over the last couple games, or two or three games. So, I mean, if the team that played all 10 of those games shows up, Missouri's going to have a very good opportunity because they have more experience and more winning experience against the quote-unquote real teams.
Yeah, and it seems interesting because it seems like that's talking point number one about Memphis' schedule. I've got stats sheets showing me that Missouri's strength of schedule is 38. Memphis isn't that far behind. Their strength of schedule says they were 49th in the country. The thing is, though, Missouri 7-4 in 11 games against the RPI top 50. Memphis has only played 6 games. They're 4-2. Missouri has more wins against the RPI top 50 than Memphis has played.
Right.
And then once you get inside the top 25, Missouri 4-1, Memphis 1-2. Question is, it seems like the question with me is, did the Northridge game wake Memphis up? Because they seemed like a far different team against Maryland than they did in the first round.
Right. I mean, you hate to flirt with a loss when you're a 2-seed in the first round there. But, I mean, yeah, if it came about that the rest of the team woke up and Robert Sally found his rhythm for the rest of the tournament, then it was completely and totally worth it. But, yeah, they're a very, very interesting team. And, I mean, no matter who they played, they're clearly extremely talented. Tyreke Evans, Robert Dozier, etc. They're just such a long team.
Yeah.
In that, you know, only one guy in the rotation is under 6'5". You know, Tyreke Evans is 6'6", I think. Antonio Anderson is 6'6". They're the two main guards. And, I mean, you know, Zaire Taylor, JT Taylor, Marcus Demon, those guys are 6'2", 6'3", 6'4". It's not like they're, you know, 5'9". But, I mean, this is just a big team. It's a big athletic, physical team. And it's going to create a very unique matchup for Missouri because they really haven't played a lot of teams like this. But at the same time, I guess Memphis hasn't played a lot of teams like Missouri either. You know, teams with the athleticism and the speed to push the tempo. And I don't know. This is people are already calling this the most intriguing of the Sweet 16 matchups, and I can see why. Because I mean, I'm a homer. I think Missouri has a definite chance to win. But even if not, you just look at the matchups, and it's intriguing at every position.
I mean, even if it's not the most intriguing, it's going to be far and away probably the most athletic just in terms of at every position on the floor. It's got so much potential for it to be explosive in terms of the athleticism that's on the court. Then you throw in how well both teams play defense, and you really have no idea what to expect.
Yeah, the turnovers are always a key with Missouri games, but the turnovers are going to be very interesting here because, again, in those 10 games, Memphis averaged almost 15 turnovers a game, and you know Tennessee is a pressing kind of team. But they were kind of less so this year. This is a different kind of Tennessee team. I don't think Bruce Pearl really had the personnel to do what he typically tries to do. But, yeah, they forced a lot of turnovers, 14 a game. They turned the ball over a lot, 15 a game. And, I mean, really it's going to come down to, I think, whoever controls the ball and gets the most shots off on each possession that's going to win this game. And, you know, Missouri's rebounding has been a problem these first two games, and that's going to be Memphis's biggest advantage. But if Memphis also turns the ball over 5 or 6 more times than Missouri does, that's going to offset whatever offensive rebounds they get.
Yeah.
So this is I went ahead and I tried something new. You know, usually I say if Missouri wins, I want to say I picked it. This time I'm going complete reverse jinx in picking Memphis to win 75-73. I mean, I picked him on my bracket, and it's not like I'm just doing it for a jinx. Memphis is damn good. But it's going to be a very interesting game as far as who sets the tempo, because Missouri does play faster than Memphis, and who gets the offensive rebounds, and who manages to not turn the ball over. And so I'm kind of glad we're going on the first night, because I'm just ready to answer these questions already, and it's only Monday.
Yeah, so, you're going trying to work the reverse jinx. I'm trying to work my my pick mediocrity as far as the tournament's been concerned. So,
well, with all this different karma going on, surely that means good things. All right, so we are one of eight games, and I guess we should probably walk through the other seven here, since really things have gone pretty quietly so far in the tournament.
Absolutely, but it makes for some great matchups heading into this week.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm all for upsets. I love upsets, and you know, a 2-year string of basically having more or less chalk reaching the Sweet 16. People are already trying to draw conclusions that you know the era of the mid major and the upset are over. Well, you know, it's 2 years, and it only takes one George Mason to throw the whole thing out of whack again. But there are definitely some heavyweight matchups going on. We'll stick with the West region first, and Connecticut, Purdue. What are your thoughts?
I think everybody kind of agrees. Connecticut's been the team to watch so far in terms of being impressive in both games. They absolutely obliterated Texas A&M, Texas A&M team who obviously we know what they're capable of whenever they decide to hit, what, like 89% of their shots in the first half?
Yeah.
Connecticut literally looked unstoppable against Texas A&M. Obviously, Texas A&M may not have all been there, but Connecticut's proven they've got a lot of different options. Just obviously, you got to watch out for Price, and you know Thabit's going to hold down the middle. Adrian will get his every now and then, but it seems like they have turned into such a more multifaceted team than they were earlier in the year. Whenever they were getting all the hype, it's almost as if those losses to Pitt have forced them to adapt. And then even with Purdue can shoot the lights out with anyone. I say that about so many teams, but Purdue's yet another one of those teams where you don't know where a lot of the offense is going to come from. On any given night, they can play with anybody, but I don't see how you stop Connecticut if they play the way they've played in the first two rounds. I can say that of anybody in the tournament, much less anybody in this region.
Yeah, and that's, thinking of the tournament as three separate mini tournaments is really kind of key here, because, I mean, yeah, if Connecticut plays like this the rest of the way, they're going to win the national title. They're really the only team that looked really, really, really impressive in both games. I guess you can count Syracuse in there, too. But, I mean, UConn was still by far the best. You know, when Pittsburgh is struggling with East Tennessee State, you know, Connecticut is absolutely embarrassing Chattanooga. And yeah, I mean, A&M's a big physical team that just did not deserve to be on the same court. So, I mean, I think you have to give the edge to Connecticut. But, you know, three or four days of patting themselves on the back, you might get a different team on Thursday, but yeah, right now it's got to be Connecticut there. And I guess if we're both picking Memphis, then what do you see for the regional final then?
I'm sticking with UConn. I know the guys from Searching for Billy Edlin are making their case for Purdue, and I could certainly believe it if Connecticut's not playing up to speed, but the way they've played in the first two rounds, I'm not picking against UConn until I see a reason to do so.
Yeah, and I mean, really, I picked Memphis in my bracket, but I mean, if I had the ability to flip right now, I think Connecticut at this point is the well-rounded team that I thought Memphis was. I'm not as sure about Memphis now, but Connecticut, yeah, you can't really pick against them until they come down a little bit from the way they were playing. So moving to the Midwest, keeping on the left side of the overall bracket, we've got two interesting, sort of interesting games, less interesting than the West region. First is Louisville versus Arizona. And, Arizona has actually sparked an interesting debate the last day or so about, did Arizona prove that they belonged in the tournament or not? Or is it not about, is it not about what you do in the tournament? I don't even know how to say it, really. Like, did Arizona prove enough in the regular season to earn their tournament bid, despite the fact that they've now played a lot better the last couple games, if that makes any sense? And, I'm still, it's all about, it's about resume. It's what you proved. I'm clearly a fan of the mid-major. I like when the mid-majors get a little benefit of the doubt. I thought Arizona just played like crap the last few weeks. And I think they've gotten a very easy draw so far. But all of that aside, they've won by 13 and 14 points. And Louisville has won by, you know, they ended up beating Morehead State by 20, but it, I mean, it was closer than anybody expected. And then, you know, they didn't pull away from Siena until the last minute or two. If Arizona gets its two good players really playing well, then, I mean, maybe this is a more of a dogfight than any of us think.
I mean, Arizona's got three guys that are averaging at least 15 points a game. What happens whenever you get a Louisville team that's, you know, I don't want to say far more balanced, but they've got a little bit more contribution down the lineup. They've got more, they're far more consistent on defense, whereas, you know, Arizona and Louisville could probably put up the same amount. I think, you know, Arizona's given up something like 7 or 8 more points per game. I think Louisville's just not necessarily the depth, but I think it's more balanced. If you're Arizona, Budinger's got to come through with a huge game, and then either Wise or Hill has to step up in a big way. I really think they might have peaked. I hate saying that they've peaked because, I mean, who really thought Cleveland State was going to end up there in the second round? So I'm having trouble believing that Arizona isn't just riding good fortune right now.
Right, and I'm definitely picking Louisville here. But, I mean, the one thing that worries me about Louisville, and the reason I believe – oh, nope, never mind, I didn't. I thought I had changed from Louisville to Pittsburgh at the last minute in my picks. I did not. The one thing that worries me about Louisville is they don't kill teams.
Yeah.
I mean, usually the number one seed in the tournament has killed some pretty decent teams. You know, they lost 90-57 in Notre Dame. And granted, that was their last loss, and it's been over a month now. But it's just, you know, if a team gets hot enough, Louisville could fold. And so, that's my one concern for them being the number one overall seed. But I don't see Arizona beating them. I just don't.
And that's Louisville's entire MO, too. I mean, for being as great of a team as they are, they flew under the radar almost the entire season in terms of being the top team in the country. They were talked about as the third or fourth best team in their own conference.
Yeah.
Now, we know how good the conference is, but even at the same time, they were talked about like they were in a second tier in that conference. Then they go on to win the Big East Championship, at which point people are still talking about Syracuse. I mean, maybe if they were blowing teams out, that would have changed. But at the same time, Louisville's done it the entire season. They just kind of hung around and just kept on winning.
Yeah, they've definitely played better. I mean, they lost to, the wind's blowing our doors open here. they lost to UNLV, they lost to Minnesota, they lost to Western Kentucky. They clearly kind of turned it around with a couple tight wins. Like, they barely beat Villanova early in January. They barely beat Kentucky, and they just seem to grow confidence. I mean, they don't kill teams. But, I mean, if it's a tie game with 2 minutes left, they know they're going to win. And there's certainly something to be said for that in the end. I mean, we can talk about scoring margins and everything, but, I mean, they're 30-5. They won the Big East and the Big East tournament. So, I mean, keep questioning them and they'll keep winning, I guess. So, if we have them making the Elite Eight, they'll play the winner of Michigan State and Kansas. Another interesting game where Kansas seems to be playing well. They too have benefited greatly from, you know, having to play a 14 and 11 seed to get to the Sweet 16, but it's not their fault. They manhandled Dayton after getting a little bit of a scare from a hot North Dakota State team, and now they get to play a team that crushed them in the regular season. So
I remember watching that game on CBS. Kansas looked like they had no business being on the same floor as Michigan State that game.
Yeah.
But we know this is a far different Kansas team than the one that showed up in East Lansing.
Well, they're 16-3 since that loss. And, I mean, I think that says something. You know, they lost 2 out of 3 there at the end of the year. Once they clinched the Big 12 title, they turned their brains off for a little bit and lost to Tech and Baylor. But when it comes to them having something to play for and them having something serious on the line, they, you know, Missouri's about the only game they've lost in the last 2 months. So, you know, I have to figure that Sharon Collins doesn't turn the ball. How many turnovers did he have in that game? Like 8 or 9, literally 8 or 9.
He had 8 turnovers in that game.
Yeah, and so you have to figure that he's going to play a little better. But, I mean, Michigan State's one of those teams that when I was trying to rank teams in you know, for my little Rockamtology thing, I always had them higher than a lot of people did. And I'm starting to think that they're one of those teams that's just maybe kind of like Louisville, where they don't look amazing, but they win. They play physical. They rebound the ball. They're a Tom Izzo team. Yeah. They rebound the crap out of the ball. They're number 4 in the country in offensive rebounding percentage. And they beat you. They don't care about looking good while they do it. They just win. And so, I mean, it's hard for me to pick against Kansas, but in the end, it's harder for me to pick against Michigan State, just knowing that they're the type of team that wins these games.
You touched on it, but the rebounds are what immediately stand out whenever you look at the numbers from whenever Kansas met Michigan State earlier in the year. And Kansas is averages 41 rebounds per game, ended up with only 31, just got destroyed on the boards. Michigan State met their 42 per game average in that game. I mean, how often do you see that from a Kansas team featuring, oh my God, the greatest center ever who can do no wrong?
Yeah, they just got manhandled. And it's, you know, this is a perfect situation for Bill Self to rile his team up and get them, you know, playing like they did the first half against Missouri. You know, this team killed us. You know, they think they're better than us, et cetera, et cetera. But, I mean, yeah, I'm sticking with the one game is not a trend, but I'm sticking with the winner of the last one until Kansas proves me wrong. Seriously, I think we're about
to... I'll take Michigan State in a close one. I think Kansas will be far more inspired and far more confident than they looked in East Lansing.
Yeah, absolutely. And seriously, I don't know what storm is coming our way, but that door has never blown loose before. This is interesting. Okay, so Louisville and Michigan State then in the regional final, two teams that we've talked about, all they do is win. Who wins and goes to the Final Four?
You know, I'm high on Louisville, but the more I look at that matchup, the more I start leaning to Michigan State, a team who maybe I did during the season, but when I was looking at my bracket, I never really considered Michigan State as a potential Final Four team that much.
Yeah.
I might lean Michigan State in that matchup.
Yeah, and we're covered here. If we pick Michigan State, then we can still say we picked Louisville in our brackets, and so we're good either way.
Yeah, just cover all bases here.
Exactly, but they do, Louisville, for how big they are, they don't rebound amazingly well. They're fine rebounding, but that is one area where Michigan State could really come through. And yeah, let's shake things up a little bit. Screw the Big East. So, I'm all for picking a surprise Michigan State Final Four there, since, you know, we're wrong no matter what we pick in these podcasts anyway.
We're right no matter what we pick, if we take both sides.
Exactly, We're good. We're taking the hard choices here. So basically, we end up with, I guess, Michigan State, Memphis in the Final Four. So quickly to the other side of the bracket here before the storm obliterates me and my internet connection. Pittsburgh Xavier. I remembered Wisconsin was playing yesterday, but I could not for the life of me remember who they were playing. And now, you know, earlier this morning, I couldn't for the life of me remember who Pittsburgh was playing because they were playing Xavier. And apparently I blocked them out of my memory. I don't think I want to watch this game. This is going to be a pretty brutal affair of two teams that I don't want Missouri to play again. And do you think Pittsburgh can bounce back from what was a relatively shaky first weekend?
I think so, and there needs to be some credit given, especially to Oklahoma State. I think Oklahoma State's the type of team that can give Pittsburgh trouble. I think Xavier is a better basketball team than Oklahoma State, but I think Pittsburgh is better suited to play with Xavier.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the one problem for Xavier in this game is some of their strengths. Pittsburgh matches up their strengths, you know, and they're better at them. Xavier is a good physical team. They rebound pretty well. They get to the free throw line a lot. But, I mean, Pittsburgh is the best rebounding team in the country, basically. And, you know, they don't go to the free throw line just a ton, and they're not particularly good at shooting free throws, but they will get four attempts per possession, it seems like. I mean, that was every time they needed points against Oklahoma State, they got them, and they just kind of willed themselves to win that game. And I think Xavier just doesn't quite match up well enough with this big, wide team in Pittsburgh.
And if there's one thing we can say for sure, it's that we know how much hitting your free throws against Xavier will help in the long run.
I should probably take the hint on that one and pick Xavier because Pitt's not a good free throw shooting team. But I won't. I'll stick to my guns. This will be an interesting game. It should be a very competitive game. But aesthetically, I'm not real sure about this one.
Yeah, and I think it's just a great matchup to help Pitt get back on track and figure out how it wants to play in the tournament.
Yeah. So Pitt moves on to the Elite Eight. They play the winner of Villanova Duke. As good as Connecticut looked against A&M, Villanova might have looked better against UCLA. And I mean, granted, they took the first 25 minutes of the American game off, and had to rally to win that one. But basically, yeah, the last 55 or so minutes of basketball that they've played, they have been unbelievable.
And I was kind of high on UCLA coming into things, and Nova just absolutely took it to them, just flat out took UCLA to the woodshed.
Yeah, turning into one of those, I mean, it's kind of like was it Sugar Ray, Roberto Duran fight where, you know, it was no more. UCLA had no interest playing another 35 minutes the way the first 5 minutes went. Absolutely. Villanova blitzed them, and UCLA just said, yeah, let's just, can we go ahead and call this one? Villanova is interesting because, I mean, we're used to those teams from a couple of years ago where they had, you know, they basically played five guards, it seemed like. And they're still fast and guard-oriented, but they are very physical. That was pretty startling that a UCLA team coached by Ben Howland was that outmatched physically. And so I was very impressed. Maybe they turn around and lay an egg against Duke, I don't know. But aside from UConn, Villanova was the most impressive team I saw the first weekend.
So I'm sold on Villanova in this one. They refused to let UCLA have anything inside. Not only that, if they took it inside, they were going to get hammered.
Yeah.
Just ridiculous how physical the game is. Now, obviously, if the officials decide to take the game over, which this is Duke, this is a very, real possibility, and Duke starts getting hot from three while, you know, Nova's guys are in some foul trouble, that swings things. But I think in a normally officiated game, I think Nova, if they play the way like they've played since they got into the tournament, I think this game definitely swings in Nova's favor as long as they stay out of foul trouble and the officials don't take over the game.
And so I think we're agreeing on Villanova. That means we picked six Elite Eight teams, four of them from the Big East, which is kind of annoying, really. But yeah, yeah, I absolutely think Villanova is the better team here, and Duke has. Duke came through when they needed to against Texas, but that was as much, it seemed like, as, you know, that was as much Texas just not getting any single bounces in that last minute or two. Yeah. And Duke, I mean, credit to them, they won, but Villanova's better, I think, at this point. So we got Pittsburgh Villanova in the East Region Finals. Who you got?
I'm starting to lean Nova a little bit, actually.
Yeah, having seen part of Pitt, Oklahoma State, and having seen part of Villanova, UCLA, again, the next weekend is a complete, you know, you have two completely separate teams than what you saw last weekend. But, I mean, yeah, I'm using the Connecticut rules here. Until I see otherwise, I think Villanova wins this game. I haven't checked. What did Villanova and Pitt do in the regular season? Let me pull that up real quick.
I've got nothing on it at the moment.
Villanova. Villanova won in Philadelphia by 10. So, I mean, it was at Nova, and that makes a huge difference. But, I mean, yeah, it at least shows that they're not physically just overmatched by Pitt. So, yeah, I'm using that as I'm bolstering. I'm abandoning my bracket. Once again, I'm going Nova.
We'll take Nova collectively then.
Okay, so we got Memphis, Michigan State. Sorry, UConn, Michigan State, and Villanova. We have disagreed with my bracket 3 out of 3 times now. And moving on to the final region, the South region. I've used the word interesting too much. I'm trying to think of another one, but two matchups. We got North Carolina. Yeah, we got North Carolina Gonzaga, where, you know, UNC was supposedly limping around. They were struggling against LSU, and then Ty Lawson just decided, you know what, my foot's fine, and took over the last 7, 8, 9, 10 minutes of the game. And I went right then and there from picking Gonzaga in this game to picking UNC again.
Not only am I picking UNC, I don't think they have any trouble. I think they flat out walk all over Gonzaga. UNC has all 5 starters in double figures on the season for their average in points.
Yeah.
How ridiculous is that?
Well, these are two extremely balanced teams. Gonzaga, you know, is the same way as far as not having a go-to guy. You just started looking matchup by matchup. I like Pargo, but I like Lawson better. I don't like Josh Heupfeldt, but I think Josh Heupfeldt's a pretty good player. But, I mean, you know, Tyler Hansbrough's better. And yeah. So I think in the individual matchups, I just think Gonzaga makes some plays and North Carolina makes a lot of them. So
I don't think there's much of a competition there. Yes, Gonzaga is a very good basketball team. I think UNC, obviously everybody knows they had the chance to be elite whenever before the season everybody was already anointing them as national champions. But I think if UNC plays anywhere near that capacity, I don't think Gonzaga belongs on the same floor.
Yeah, I don't think... Yeah, UNC is not as good as they were supposed to be in November. But, I mean, I think Lawson proved a lot to me in the second round, just basically saying, I am physically capable of taking over a game, and by God, I'm going to if I need to. And, I mean, that was the difference to me.
I mean, what does that say when Tyler Hansbrough isn't even the most important player on his team anymore?
Yeah, it was actually kind of... I mean, Lawson was big, was ACC Player of the Year, wasn't he?
I believe so.
And Hansbrough's still the finalist for the... what is it? The Wooden Award. Yeah. But... no, not the Naismith Award.
Naismith, sorry.
All right, so North Carolina moves on to the Elite Eight to play the winner of Syracuse, Oklahoma. This is one in my bracket. I had Arizona State playing North Carolina in the Elite Eight, so I don't have a horse in this race anymore. Does Blake Griffin and maybe a hot shooting guard overcome what has turned out to be a hell of a team effort in Syracuse over the last couple weeks?
Okay, if you're whining about the number of Big East teams we've had advancing, this probably isn't going to help the cause at all. I saw Syracuse earlier in the season, just watched them a couple times, and I was 100% sold on Syracuse, absolutely blown away. They make the big run through the Big East tournament. Obviously, they've got the losses in conference along the way, but there's not that much shame in that conference not coming through unscathed. But then, for some reason, I managed to convince myself that the game against UConn, I convinced myself somehow they were still going to be that worn out and just that exhausted that I went against my original gut and had them losing pretty early. I think Syracuse is a good enough team. I really do think they beat Oklahoma, especially the Oklahoma team that remains, that's not the Oklahoma team we saw earlier in the year.
Yeah, Oklahoma just hasn't been as dominant. Clearly, and I think Syracuse in the Big East tournament, the way they played, nine games in 3 days or whatever it added up to in the end. Being that Syracuse had already done that before, and then it turned around and laid an egg in the NCAA tournament a few years ago, that I think hurt them as far as people filling out their brackets. Like if it was West Virginia doing all this, we might not have thought of it, but because it was Syracuse, this was like, we had already been here before. And Syracuse is clearly going to lay an egg again. Well, they're not. This is a team that has won, I think, 9 out of 10 now after a pretty poor stretch of basketball. And whereas you've seen them play well quite a lot, it's kind of funny. Like, I watched some of the Syracuse-Rutgers game a few weeks ago on, I guess it was on ESPNU, and I was just flabbergasted by how awful Syracuse looked the first half and part of the second half. It was like 29-28 into the second half. And then I tune in a little bit later, and they won 70-40. So apparently, we're opposite here. I always miss when Syracuse is playing amazingly well, but I know they do play well, and I'm not going to go against them with what I've seen out of OU recently.
Yeah, and to pull out the Missouri football reference, because it's getting to be about that time. It seems Oklahoma's basketball team is kind of like Missouri's football team was this past year, in the sense that the start of the season, they're just steamrolling people, and all the players think they're invincible, and they're playing above their heads a little bit. And then all of a sudden, that little chink in the armor, the settling for the field goal against Oklahoma State, and the Blake Griffin injury, all of a sudden, that mentality is completely wiped away, and they're just trying to figure out what to do with themselves.
That's a decent... The swagger is gone, and they're not quite the same team anymore. All right, we're reaching 40 minutes quickly, so we've got UNC Syracuse. Who you got?
UNC.
I guess I might as well stick to my bracket at least one time here. We'll go UNC. It's almost boring after a couple of the other picks we've made now. But all right, so we've got UConn and Michigan State in one Final Four.
I've said it earlier. I'm sticking with UConn until I see a reason not to.
Yep, ditto. And do you apply the same logic to Villanova UNC?
I'll go chalk with that one. Give me UNC.
I don't have a coin around to flip, so I'll agree with you. I was going to try to break the tie, but I don't know where a coin is. So, so UConn, UNC in the finals.
And the logic applies. I'm sticking with UConn until I see otherwise.
Yeah, and I hope that all this becomes moot, and I hope Purdue beats UConn in the Sweet 16 and Missouri beats Memphis, and we don't have to play UConn at all.
That'd be fantastic.
Oh, yeah. I'm all for being wrong about this, but yeah, I think UConn's the best team right now, and that's I guess that's what we're going with. That's not at all what I went with in my bracket, but I never do well with the brackets. So I'm used to it.
Yeah, I said I'd be far more concerned if this was the bull pick'em when I was at the bottom. But with me, with brackets, it seems like being in the basement just comes with the territory.
All right, so we are close to 40 minutes here. There are two other things. This isn't, you know, the Beef's all sports, world famous all sports report. He is kind of sort of out of the country right now. And with the weekend Mizzou had in all sports, we should encourage him to leave the country more often. But along with Missouri making the Sweet 16, the biggest news of the weekend had to be Mark Ellis, the heavyweight wrestler, going out and winning himself a national championship. This was a guy, as was said on Rock M, you know, when Dom Bradley came to Columbia last year as an incoming freshman, he was the number one heavyweight recruit in the country. We just kind of assumed that Ellis was going to get lost in the shuffle, that Bradley was going to take over, and that Ellis really kind of had missed his opportunity. He wrestled well enough last year that they redshirted Bradley, and this year Bradley was very, very good at times, but Ellis was just too good to keep out of the whatever you call it in wrestling, the starting lineup. And, you know, he got, the two seed, I guess, in the tournament. And the Iowa State guy at number one lost. And, you know, Ellis swooped in, took advantage, and became won Missouri's third national championship, became the second Mizzou wrestler to do it after Aspen Run 2. And all the kudos in the world to Mark Ellis for proving everybody wrong and making Missouri proud on that one. So
absolutely.
That and kudos to Kyle Gibson for becoming, you know, possibly even more dominant than Aaron Crow or Max Scherzer here to start the Big 12 season, just crushing the number one and three teams in the country. And with that, I guess we need to head out because it's, you know, almost past my bedtime.
And it's the fastest 40 minutes of podcasting. We turn it into 45 or 50.
Yeah, I think we proved that wrong on a week-to-week basis, but that's the name, and we're sticking to it, so... Tune in next time. Hopefully we will be able to play Brass Bonanza early Friday morning after a Mizzou win over Memphis. So go Tigers. Oh, I'm sorry. We have a new song to play. I almost forgot about that. This is, we're going to try new exit music each time we go to celebrate Mizzou's trip to Arizona. This is, very appropriately, Arizona by Kings of Leon.